welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. Mark Levonier, your host for This Hour of Horror. Later on, Suspense from 1959. But first, an episode of The Mysterious Traveler called The Man Insects Hated from July 27, 1947 on Mutual.
Mutual presents The Mysterious Traveler.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can. It's the end of July, and rather warm, isn't it? There's probably an insect or two buzzing around in your living room right this moment, or banging against your screen trying to get in. Before we go any further, you better get rid of it. If you do, you'll breathe easier as you hear the unusual story I have for you today. The story I call The Man the Insects Hated. My story begins in a homemade laboratory in a crumbling mansion on the edge of a bayou, deep in the heart of the Louisiana swamps. Outside, the air is filled with the strident hum and buzz of insects, uncounted swarms of them crawling and hopping and flying in the hot, lush atmosphere. Inside the laboratory, the air is filled with the same sound as a small man with graying hair lifts a wire insect trap to a table.
Listen to them, Mary. How they hate me, every one of them. The flies, the bees, the hornets, the beetles, the locusts, the spiders, they all hate me.
Oh, John, they don't hate you. They're just bugs. They can't hate you.
Yes, but listen to them hum and buzz when I come near. They know me. And the reason they're so upset is that they know that we're enemies and that I'm going to destroy them. Destroy them utterly.
All right, John.
Oh, Mary, you look tired. This life we've been leading the last few months, it's very dreary for you, isn't it?
It's all right, John. It doesn't matter.
Oh, but it does. These swamps, they must seem like the last outpost of creation to you. You always did love the city and the lights, the movement, the gaiety.
I'm all right. You mustn't worry about me. It's such a struggle. If we had someone to help us, it would be easier. But no one will come out here and work for us.
Yes, I know, my darling. Believe me, I do, but it's only for a little while. Soon we'll be rich. I promise it.
All right, John. I'll be patient.
You do believe me, Mary. You know that I'm on the verge of success now, don't you? That last formula, you saw how quickly it killed every insect in the cage?
Yes, I know. It was wonderful, John.
Yes, and you know yourself what it'll mean to the world. The perfect insect killer, something much better than DDT. Why, it will be tremendous. It will make the worst jungle livable. It will cut down disease and increase the crops.
There's someone at the door.
Yes. That's very odd. I wonder who it could be.
I'll see. Perhaps it's Dr. Guernsey or Mr. Conway, the druggist. They promised to call.
Good morning. Is Professor Hansen in?
Why, yes, he is. Come in quickly. There's so many flies.
Yeah. Seems like the air is full of bugs outside. Never saw so many in my life.
What is it, Mary?
It's someone to see you, John. I don't know who.
Andrews, the name, Professor. Martin Andrews. Say, you really are out in the wilds here, aren't you? Thought I'd never find you.
Yes, we are rather isolated, but...
You're wondering who I am and what I want here. The truth is, I was in Conway's drugstore back in town, and he told me you might be able to use a handyman.
Oh, a handyman.
Yes, we can use a handyman. How much do you want?
Oh, not very much. I guess 25 bucks a week would do me.
Well, we can manage that, I think.
But on second thought, I don't know. I'm not crazy about these swamps with all these bugs around and...
Oh, please try it anyway, Mr. Andrews. My husband is engaged on some very important research, and he needs help badly.
Oh... Well, when you put it like that, Mrs. Hansen...
Then you will stay.
Yeah, I'll stay. What have I got to lose? Maybe I'll like it better than I thought at first.
Excellent, Mr. Andrews, excellent.
Oh, just call me Martin, Professor.
Yes, Martin, yes. Now, there are a lot of details that you can help me with. Now, take this watch and...
Lunch will be ready in a minute.
Oh, yes, my dear, yes. Take this watch, Martin, mm-hmm. and you see this wire trap full of insects?
Yeah. There must be thousands of bugs in there.
There are. You see, I'm working to discover the perfect insect exterminator.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Yes, and in this spray gun, I have my latest solution, Formula 312. And I'm going to spray it just once at this trap full of insects, and you are to time how long it takes them all to die.
You're going to kill all those bugs with just one squirt in that sprayer?
I hope so. And they know it, too. Listen to them hum. How they hate me. They know I'm going to kill them, and they wish they could get free to kill me.
Huh?
Oh, yes. Yes, they know me. Insects hate me. All insects, just as I hate them. They'd kill me if they could, but instead I'm going to kill them. Have you put your eye on the watch?
What? Oh, yeah, sure.
Then start timing. Now, watch and listen.
Say, that stuff really mows them down, Professor.
Yes, they're dying now. A few of them are still trying to crawl around, but there they go. Now, how long did it take?
29 seconds.
It's good, but not quite good enough. But I'm sure I'm on the right track.
Lunch is ready, John.
Oh, yes, my dear, yes, we're coming. Well, Martin, do you think you're going to like working here, helping me develop my new insect killer?
Yes, sir, Professor. I've got an idea it's going to be a lot more interesting here than I ever imagined.
Some more coffee, John?
Thank you, my dear. No, I want to go back to the lab to try a new formula. And while I'm mixing it, why don't you show Martin around the place?
Why,
that's a swell idea, Professor. I'd like to get wise to just what you're doing here.
But I'm sure that John could show you around and explain everything better than I could.
No, not at all, Marion. Besides, you know how I feel about going outdoors.
Well, all right, John. If you want me to.
Fine. I'll get started on the new mixture right away, and when you're through, I'll have something for you to do, Martin.
Okay, Professor. Well, Mrs. Hansen, I'll be obliged to you if you'll give me the lowdown on everything.
Well, all right, Martin. There are things that you really should know.
That's how it is, huh?
Mm-hmm.
The professor is hipped on the subject of bugs and wants to rid the world of them. And he thinks they all know it and hate him, huh? Oh, that's a hot one. The bees and the mosquitoes and the flies, they all got it in for him, huh?
You mustn't laugh. I know it's a strange quirk of his mind, but it's a harmless one. And you must pretend not to notice anything odd about it.
Okay, Mrs. Hansen, if you say so.
You see, when he was a small boy, my husband was almost stung to death by a swarm of bees. That brought on his peculiar hatred of all insects and his belief that they hate him.
Sure, I can see how that'd be.
And that's the reason why all his life he's been experimenting to find the perfect insect exterminator.
It's screwy, but if he does find this perfect bug killer, it'll pay off big.
Oh, he will find it. I'm sure of it. That's why I'm willing... I'm sure he will.
You were going to say that's why you're willing to stay here in this swamp, because you think he'll find this bug killer and make a lot of money from it, huh? Well, that's the truth, ain't it, Mrs. Hansen?
You're being impertinent.
The first time I looked at you, I could see you weren't meant for a life like this. You were meant for pretty clothes and soft music, dancing, fun. Not for rotting away in a swamp that's only fit for bugs.
You mustn't talk like that. I've got to go back to the house.
No, not yet. Listen, the minute I stepped inside that house, I knew you were eating your heart out all for fun and people and pretty things.
I don't know what you're talking about. Let go of my wrist.
Not yet. Listen, I'm no handyman. I know how to make money when I want to. It's just good luck that brought me here, my good luck. There's meant to be something between us. I knew that the second you opened the door this morning.
You're crazy. Let me go.
Sure, I'll let you go. There. Well, why don't you run away from me now that you can?
You mustn't say things like that. You mustn't.
But I already have, and I will again. You weren't meant to be married to a dotty old dodo like the professor. You were meant to live. And I'm going to hang around here until I prove it to you.
And so Martin Andrews joined the strange household in the swamps, the household where Professor Hansen plotted death for the insect world. Well, Mary suggested to him that it had been a mistake to hire Martin so hastily without investigating his background. But her husband pooh-poohed her argument, and she was silent, knowing she could not explain that she was both frightened and fascinated by a man whom she'd seen for the first time that day. So Martin stayed. And in the days that followed, Professor Hansen found him invaluable. With his help, the work went much more quickly. And daily, as the work progressed, the number of insects swarming about the house increased, buzzing and humming ominously as though news of the professor's success was spreading throughout the whole swamp. Then one morning in the laboratory...
Time, Martin. Exactly 15 seconds, Professor.
15 seconds and every insect in the trap is dead. We've done it, Martin. Mary? Mary?
Yes, John. What is it?
Mary, we've done it. At last, I found the formula that will kill any insect known almost instantly.
Oh, John. Oh, I'm so glad.
Yes, formula 397. See, here it is. Just a few marks on this piece of paper. But it's man's final victory over the insect world.
Ha ha! Listen to the bugs outside hum, Professor. Yes. They sound almost like they knew what you'd done.
Oh, yes, they do know. But they're helpless. They're beaten, and they know it. Yes, now I've got to write a note to Dr. Guernsey and Mr. Conway. Martin, wait here for me.
Yeah, sure, Professor.
Martin, what are you doing with that formula?
Just putting it in my pocket where it'll be safe. You know how the professor is, always losing things.
Give it to me, please. I'll take care of it.
No, I think I'd better hold on to it. But I have something else for you.
No, let me go. Let go of me.
Ever since that first day... And I've been waiting until you knew as well as I do that we were meant for each other.
You mustn't say such things.
You do know it, don't you?
No. No.
Maybe this will convince you.
Oh, Martin.
Now you know it, don't you?
Yes. Oh, I'm crazy, I suppose. But I can't help it. You've got to go away, Martin. Now, today.
You are crazy if you think I'm going without you. Oh, here comes the professor. We'll talk about it later.
Martin, here's a note from Mr. Conway, the druggist. I've asked him to come out with Dr. Guernsey tomorrow night. Will you drive into town and deliver it to him, please?
Sure, Professor. I'd be glad to. Right away.
Come in, Martin, quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, my, your clothes are covered with insects. Here, stand still a minute. I'll get rid of them. There. It takes care of that. How in the world did so many get on you?
When I got out to open the garage door, they were crawling all over it. They dropped onto me. I couldn't knock them off.
John! Oh, John!
Yes, Mary?
John, there are ants in the kitchen. A whole swarm of giant black ants. They're monsters.
Giant ants in the kitchen? How did they get in?
I don't know, but they're there. And more coming all the time.
Well, never mind. We'll take care of them. Come on, Martin. Bring the spray gun.
Right.
They mustn't get into the house. I won't let them. They want to get at me, but they're not going to.
There they are, John. All over the floor.
These giant ants. The floor's black with them. And look at them come this way toward me. They know who I am. Quick, Martin. Use the spray.
Yes, Professor. This will fix them. Look at them turn up their toes. That finishes them.
But how in the world did they get in? I thought I'd made this house insect-proof.
Here are some more, coming through this hole in the woodwork.
I'll take care of them. Now, I'll plug up the hole. No more will come in that way.
They're such big ants. I've never seen any that big before.
And they were after me. But we've taught them a lesson.
Professor,
You've almost convinced me you're right. About the bugs hating you, I mean.
What are you saying?
It's the truth. You never saw so many bugs in your life as there are outside right now. When I got back from town, I could hardly see the house for the beetles and the flies and the hornets that are buzzing around it. And a couple of times, the car ran over columns of ants so thick I thought they were going to clog the wheels. Columns heading this way.
Is that so? I must go over to the window and see for myself. Yes, good heavens, the screen is so covered with insects I can't see out.
I'll give them a dose of your bug killer. That'll make them move on. There. That cleared them off. Now, take a look outside, Professor. Did you ever see anything like that in your life?
Oh!
Good Lord, the sky is black with insects. Look at that swarm over the trees. Flying beetles, wasps, bees, locusts. I can't identify them all.
Yeah, and just listen to them. Listen to that song of hate.
Don't say that. It's just a natural phenomenon. These swamps breed insects by the millions.
Yeah, I know. And every one of those millions is headed right for this spot.
But that's ridiculous.
No, it's not. All the way to town, I didn't see a single bug. Because they're all gathered right around here, right around this house.
You mustn't say that.
He's right. They know what's happening here, and they want to stop me.
No, John, no.
If you want my advice, the thing to do is make up all the Formula 397 we can. If those bugs ever get into this house, we're going to need it.
Day wore on, the clouds of insects surrounding the old mansion in the swamps grew steadily bigger. At times, the house was almost hidden by the black swarms of tiny creatures flying and crawling over it, as if they really were trying to force their way inside. But only a few did get into the house through unnoticed cracks. But as night came on...
John?
Yes?
John, the lights won't go on.
They won't?
No, look. Her fuse must have blown out.
I'll go take a look, Professor. I have the flashlight.
Thank you, Martin.
I'll only be a minute.
Listen to them, Mary. Listen to them swarming about the house, beating against the screens, trying to get in at me.
Oh, John, they're just insects. They don't hate you.
They don't? Well, then where have they come from? Why are they surrounding this house? Answer me that.
Oh, I don't know.
Martin agrees with me. He said so this afternoon.
You mustn't pay any attention to Martin.
Listen to them. If they could get in, we'd be dead in 15 minutes. There's death we hear humming and buzzing out there, Mary.
Professor! Professor!
Yes, what is it? Did you find the trouble?
Yes, it's in the switch box, all right. All the fuses are blown out.
All of them? But how?
The switch box is full of little beetles. I don't know where they came from, but they caused a short circuit that blew out all the fuses.
They did it on purpose.
Oh, John!
Well, anyway, we'll be using candles tonight. And there's another thing.
What, Martin?
The cellar is full of little white ants. I couldn't find out where they're coming from.
White ants?
Not ants, Martin. Those are termites.
Well, termites, then. They're all over everything.
Termites? They can eat their way through wood. They can eat holes that the other insects can enter through.
Yeah. That's right, isn't it?
Martin, come on. Get two insect sprays. We've got to get down there and destroy them before they destroy us.
Billions of bugs out there. Crickets, bees, flies, hornets, wasps, ants, every kind of insect there is. It's a good thing you put tight screens on this house.
John!
What is it, Mary?
I thought I felt the house shake then.
Ah, don't let your imagination get you. I didn't feel anything.
No. You must keep control of your nerves.
Oh, I suppose I imagined it then. Oh, John, it's almost midnight. Are they ever going to go away?
Maybe not. If the professor's right and they're after him, they'll just hang around until we starve to death. Or until they get in and finish us off.
Oh, Martin, stop it.
Martin is right. We've used up all the Formula 397, and if they ever do get into the house, we're doomed.
I was just thinking that myself.
We have got to get help.
Go out of the house?
Yes.
Oh, no, John.
Not all of us. But maybe if I were to take the car and make a dash for town, they might follow me.
John, that's madness.
In the sedan, with all the windows shut, they couldn't get at me. And in town, I could get help.
Yeah, you could.
I could make up more Formula 397 at Conway's drugstore, and he and Dr. Guernsey can come back with me. And if we use the big pumper spray, we could destroy every insect that's outside.
No, you mustn't try it.
It sounds like a good idea to me. I'd go, only I couldn't mix the formula.
No, John, you mustn't go out.
Yes, I'm going to do it. If those ants ever get at the car, they'd cut the tires to shreds, and then we would be at their mercy. I've got to go for help while I can.
Then let's all go. We can all get in the car.
It'd be safer to stay here. This house will hold them off for a good while yet. I think the professor's scheme is the best.
All right, Martin. Now, I'll get ready. And then you come downstairs and help me with the garage doors. And you're going to have to open and shut them awfully fast when I take the car out.
Despite Mary's protests, Professor Hansen carried out his plan. With the car tightly closed, the motor racing, Martin flung open the garage doors. The car shot out into the night, the headlights showing great swarms of flying insects in its path. Then Martin swiftly closed and bolted the door again and hurried upstairs.
Well, he's gone.
Oh, why did you let him go?
That ought to be obvious.
What do you mean?
I didn't let him go. I made him go. I put the whole idea in his mind so he'd go off and leave us alone here.
Oh, no.
Sure I did. I'm a bright boy. From now on, it's going to be just you and me and fun.
What are you saying?
John isn't going to come back from his little trip to town.
I don't understand.
Well, I'll make it simple. In the first place, all those bugs outside don't mean a thing. When I was in town this morning, Conway the druggist told me it happens out here every 7 years or so. There's something about the way the wind blows that makes millions of bugs come out of the swamp to swarm around this house in certain years.
Oh, but then why did you pretend to believe John when he said it was because they were after him?
Just so as he'd go to town for help. Those bugs are harmless. As soon as the wind shifts, they'll be gone.
But then...
Right this minute, John's driving to town as fast as he can go. And any second now, the steering gear is going to bust.
Martin. No.
Yes, baby, because I fixed it to. And when that steering wheel goes, it'll be curtains for John. The car will hit a tree, and you'll be free to marry me. We'll have Formula 397 and all the dough it'll bring in.
That's murder.
No, it isn't murder. It's being smart.
You've murdered John. I'm guilty, too, because I didn't make him send you away.
Oh, you never really wanted me to go.
I ought to loathe you and myself, too, but I...
But you don't.
No, Martin, I don't.
That's more like it, baby. We'll always be together. Always.
Forever, Martin. We... Martin!
Huh?
Something's happening.
What?
The house. It's shaking.
Oh, we've got to get out of here. The house is caving in. It's very quick. Grab hold of me. Come on now, before... Look out!
Martin!
Conway, can't you drive faster? We must get back to the house.
I'm driving as fast as I can, Professor.
Professor, you must control yourself. That was a serious accident you were in. It's a miracle you weren't killed.
Sure was. The way your car hit that tree, well, I'm just glad it wasn't me.
Yes, 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 but please drive faster.
No, I should never have allowed you to return to your home with us. You should be in a hospital.
But, Doctor, my wife and Martin, I've got to save them. Those insects, they hate me. They're out to destroy all of us. They'll kill my wife and Martin if we don't get there in time.
Professor, you must calm yourself. I'm sure it isn't as serious as all that.
Oh, Doctor, you're like everyone else. You don't know how dangerous the insect world is, but I know, and that's why they hate me, and that's why they're out to destroy me and my wife and Martin.
Well, we're almost there. The house is just around this bend in the road.
Yes, but please hurry. You mustn't slow down.
Professor, I gotta take this curve slow. After all, we don't want no more... Good Lord.
The house. It's collapsed.
They wrecked it. The insect wrecked it. I think they're out to get me. Now, come quickly. We must find my wife and Martin.
Come along, Conway. This looks bad.
Yes, Doctor.
Mary. Mary, where are you? Mary, answer me.
Conway, you'd better start looking through the wreckage.
Okay, Doctor.
Mary! Mary, where are you?
Oh, Lord, I've never seen so many bugs in all my life.
If we'd only had more of my Formula 397, we could kill all of them. All of them! But they won't get the better of me. They won't!
Professor, what are you doing? There isn't any spray in that gun. It's empty.
I'll show them.
Doctor. I found them. They're under the wreckage of the house.
Oh, you'd better take me to them, Conway. Perhaps we can...
It's too late, Doc. They're both dead.
Dead? They're dead?
Yes, Professor. They were killed by falling timbers when the house collapsed.
No! It wasn't the falling timbers that killed them. It was the insect world that killed them. They tried to destroy me, and instead they murdered Mary. And now they're trying to break me down, but I won't let them. I won't let them! My formula. Formula 397. This spray will destroy them all. Yes. They're dying, left and right. They're dying.
Doc, what's wrong with them? That spray gun's empty.
Yes, Conway, I know. I'm afraid he's completely mad. The insect world has destroyed his mind.
This is the mysterious traveler again. And how did you enjoy our visit with the man the insects hated? Too bad about poor Professor Hansen, wasn't it? Yes, they found he'd gone completely mad, and in his madness had completely forgotten his newly discovered formula 397, which would destroy all insects. What happened to the copy of the formula which Martin had stolen? Well, strangely enough, when Martin's body was removed from the wreckage, the formula was not in his pocket. Some people say that the insect... Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
Just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. In today's story, the cast included Maurice Tarplin, Eric Dressler, Helen Shields, and Robert Dryden. Original music was played by Gene Perazzo. The Mysterious Traveler is written, produced, and directed by Bob Arthur and David Kogan. Listen next week to a tale titled...
I Dream of Dying.
Another strange and terrifying tale of the mysterious traveler. The Mysterious Traveler has come to you from our New York studios. Carl Caruso speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Mysterious Traveler, on Tune to Two yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from July 27, 1947. The story first heard on the series 3 years earlier, in October of 1944, though a recording of that does not exist to this day. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tune to Two yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for radio's outstanding theater of thrills, suspense. The CBS broadcast from February 1st, 1959, called Return to Dust.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Faithful listeners, and who among you is not, will remember a strange and wonderful story we presented some time ago about a member of the Beat Generation called the Tennis Shoe. It was the first radio play by a young man of whom we have expected much, and we have not been disappointed. Herewith, another strange and wonderful story by 26-year-old George Bamber. In years to come, we feel confident that we will be proud to recall that it was on Suspense that this brilliant writer was first heard. Listen then as Richard Beals stars in Return to Dust, which begins in just a moment.
Another visit with Joe and Daphne Forsythe.
Okay, Daphne. The slides are all set. Turn off the lights.
There. Oh, Joe, isn't that pretty? Where was that?
That was Vail Pass on the Grand Divide. Remember how hard the wind blew?
I certainly do, and it was cold, too. Next time we go on a vacation, let's get an earlier start.
Well, we save money by waiting till fall. Remember this one?
Oh, sure. That's Zion National Park. Oh, it was lovely.
We sure had a lot of fun on that trip. It was worth the money.
It was a good investment, all right. Almost as good as savings bonds.
There you go again.
Well, I just can't get over how good a bargain they are. We women like bargains, you know.
Oh, I know that. And $4 back for every $3 invested is a pretty good bargain.
Right. Oh, was that where I fed the bear?
Yeah, that's Yosemite. We were lucky the bears weren't already in hibernation.
How do they live when they hibernate?
On fat they store up during the warm months.
Just like savings bonds.
Huh?
Well, you buy a saving bond a month, right?
Yeah.
And it's a great way to save, the way those bonds rack up interest, right?
Right.
So we're just like the bears. We're storing up fat for our future use at interest rates that give us $4 at maturity for every $3 invested.
A very interesting idea.
You can learn a lot from nature.
Yeah, just imagine Smokey the Bear selling savings bonds.
Oh, Joe, show the slides.
And now, Return to Dust, starring Mr. Richard Beals, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Testing. 1, 2, 3. Testing. Testing. Attention, Dr. Warren Vader, Department of Pathology, School of Medicine, State University. This is James Howard, Research Fellow in Pathology, speaking. At the moment, I am seated on the tape recorder that is recording this message to you. As a point of fact, by the yardstick on my desk, I stand exactly 12 inches, and I am steadily decreasing in size. I calculate if I continue to shrink at the present rate of speed, it is possible that I will become invisible to the human eye sometime before midnight. I've been trying to reach you by phone since 8 this morning, but you are not at home and have not yet arrived at your office. Since you are the only person with an adequate scientific background and technical knowledge to save me, it is imperative that my last whereabouts is known to you in the event I cannot contact you by phone. Thus the precaution of this recording. As you will have discovered by now, I have gone against your orders and pursued my theory of cancer cell growth by working in the lab at night after my regular duties. I have been trying to prove that the biochemical agent not only stops abnormal cell division, but reduces the existing cells in physical size until the neutralizer is induced. The fact that I have shrunk from 5 1/2 feet to 1 foot should be proof beyond refutation, though my condition is the result of an accident. While trying to introduce a more powerful catalyst in the laboratory last night, I inadvertently created an uncontrolled reaction which manifested itself as a white mist which filled the entire lab. The mist lasted no more than a few seconds, and as I observed no effects other than this, I continued working. When I got home, I descended into one of the deepest and blackest sleeps I have ever experienced. I woke this morning to discover myself literally lost in a sea of blankets. I had shrunk 4 feet 8 inches during the night. Naturally, my first reaction was one of panic. But I soon realized that my only salvation was to remain calm until I contacted you. You'll find a more complete report of my theory and the experiments which I've conducted to prove it in the uncompleted thesis here on my desk. This thesis, Dr. Bader, will open a door to a cure for man's worst disease, cancer. As for myself, you'll find detailed instructions on how to reverse the action which I've accidentally initiated. You'll find this on pages 79, 80, and 81. No matter how small I shall become, even microscopic, you will be able to reverse the process if you follow the instructions on those pages. Now, I had better place another telephone call to your office, Dr. Bader, while I'm still big enough to dial the phone. It is just possible that your efficient secretary forgot to tell you that I called. The phone has grown almost half as tall as I am. A strange sensation. Who would think the tensor springs on these dials would be so strong? And who would think I would have to use both hands to dial the telephone? Miss Pritchard, has Dr. Bader come in yet?
Whom shall I say is calling?
This is James Howard, Miss Pritchard. It's urgent.
It doesn't sound like you, Mr. Howard.
It's me, all right.
I'm sorry. Dr. Bader isn't in.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am sure. Dr. Bader is not at this moment in his office.
Now, look, Miss Pritchard, don't pull that Dr. Bader isn't in stuff to me. You tell Dr. Bader I have to talk to him.
I'm sorry, Mr. Howard. Dr. Bader is not in.
Look, this is a matter of life and death.
I'll tell him when he comes in. In the meantime, is there anything I can do?
There's nothing anyone can do but Dr. Bader. He's the only man in the world that can help me.
Well, I'll tell him as soon as he comes in.
Yes, you do that, Miss Pritchard. Why, Dr. Bader? Why, of all days, did you have to pick today to change your routine? For the last 20 years, you've been in your office from 9 until 12. Why did you have to pick this morning to change?
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense. Mr. Richard Beals, Act Two of Return to Dust.
Yes, self-preservation is the most powerful instinct. It is now 3:30 in the afternoon, and I have shrunk to the unbelievable height of 6 inches. And I'm continuing to shrink. Yet I'm taking every precaution to guarantee that I stay alive. What have I got to live for? What am I? A 32-year-old old man that's losing his hair, walks with a stoop from years of hunching over microscopes? What have I got to show for it? A cheap, furnished room, a meager position as a research fellow, which doesn't pay enough to live like other people. Not enough to have a wife or children. And no dignity, certainly. All that I can call mine is in this room. A couple of suits, some socks with holes in them, piles of heavy books, a microscope on my desk, and a tape recorder to record my notes on. That's all that will be left of Mr. James Howard, research fellow. Oh, excuse me, Dr. Pastor. And one green and gold parakeet with the name of Pastor. To pose a hypothetical problem, Dr. Pastor, who's going to change the water in your cage if I return to dust? Certainly not Dr. Bader. He might steal what little water you had, but he wouldn't change it. Who will? If I don't contact the doctor, it may be a week before the landlady comes up here to clean. He'd starve to death. I've got to open that cage and let him loose. But how? The yardstick. I can push the latch open with that. Yes. Yes, I can just reach it. There. You're free, Dr. Pastor. You're free. The window is open across the room. There's a whole world. Fly away and make a name for yourself. The whole world. I've got the whole world ahead of me, too, if I live. After I publish my thesis, I'll be famous. I'll have everything I ever dreamed of. But not unless Dr. Bader gets the instructions. So, we resume taping. But I can't reach the start button on the recorder. These books, they're like a grand staircase to the tape deck. And now to start the machine. I'm no longer big enough to push it. Kick it. Oh, that hurt. I've got it. Jump on it. There we go. Dr. Bader. This is James Howard recording again. I have still not received your phone call, but I have not given up hope. In the meanwhile, I have made the necessary precautions for isolating myself in the event that you do not call before tomorrow morning. I have made a ramp with a ruler to the stage of the microscope. Glued to the microscope is a transparent glass petri dish. As soon as it becomes apparent that I'm in danger of being lost from view on the desk, I will make my way to the petri dish. But what if you haven't called by the time I could be lost in the petri dish? I could prepare a slide for myself. If I diminished to the size of a one-celled organism, I would have no difficulty in crawling under the cover glass and taking up a position directly under the lens. Perhaps I should prepare a slide now. You've called, Dr. Bader. You've called at last. No! I can't lift it. I'm too small. I can't lift it off the cradle. No, stop ringing, please. I'll lift it somehow. But how? A lever. Give me a lever and I can move the world. A pencil. I can do it with a pencil. Don't hang up, Dr. Bader. I'm looking. Please don't hang up, Dr. Bader. I'm coming. Just don't stop ringing. Please don't stop ringing. Please. Just don't hang up, Dr. Bader. I've almost got it. Just a little more.
In a moment, we continue with the third act of Suspense. Although most men by nature don't feel in a combat mood much of the time, there are some who just can't get enough of a good fight, particularly if there's a good sound reason for it.
In July 1900, when American fighting men were protecting the rights and liberty of their fellow countrymen during the Boxer Uprising, the battle was a furiously fought affair. Army Private Robert H. von Schlick, serving with Company C of the 9th United States Infantry Division, was in the thick of the fracas. Although he had been wounded previously while carrying a wounded comrade to a place of safety, he rejoined his command, which partly occupied an exposed position on a dike. Private von Schlick remained there after his company had been withdrawn and, in spite of the hail of bullets around him, single-handedly continued to fire into the enemy ranks. Oblivious to the fact that he was a conspicuous target, he refused to leave the fight until he was literally shot off his position by the enemy. Private Robert von Schlick earned the Medal of Honor for valiant devotion to duty and added heroic background to the code of conduct of American fighting men.
And now, starring Mr. Richard Beals, Act 3 of Return to Dust.
I almost gave up when you hung up, Dr. Bader. But then I remembered a simple law of mathematics. No matter how often you divide a thing, there's still something left. So I went ahead with the preparation for my survival. And a good thing, too. It's not yet 6 o'clock and I am now only a half an inch tall. But everything is now arranged. In the center of the petri dish on the microscope stage is a prepared slide complete with slip cover and label. The only thing lacking is the specimen. And that is me. If I become so small that I am in danger of being lost in the petri dish, I will make my way to the exact center of the slide and take up a position there. You should be able to see me for some time to come because I focused the microscope. All you have to do, Dr. Bader, is look. Just look to see me. My world is such a different place now. Books are as huge as buildings, and pencils seem like telephone poles. I wonder what my world will look like if no one ever finds me. Oh, yes, Dr. Bader. The slide under the microscope is labeled carefully. Of all the slides I've labeled in my lifetime, I hardly thought the last one might become my epitaph. Specimen, James Howard. Species, Homo sapiens. Condition, excellent. Oh, Dr. Pasteur, haven't you flown the coop yet? Is your loyalty so great that you refuse to leave so long as the last particle of me remains? Or are you hungry? What an ugly monster you are from this perspective. Your feathers are like scales of armor. Infested with lice, I see. And that beak. No! No, Dr. Pasteur! No! Kill me! I must back up slowly. Don't run. Slow. Back between the books and the microphone. Slowly. Now, I'm safe here. Until he loses interest. I should have let him starve to death in his cage. I wonder if the tape's still recording. I can see the spool still turning. High above me, the clear plastic reflecting the last rays of the sun setting outside my window. But I can't see if there's tape. Are you there? Am I recording, Dr. Bader? This is James Howard. As soon as the bird loses interest, I'm going to make a break for it.
Suspense. In which Richard Beale starred in William N. Robeson's production of Return to Dust, written by George Bamber. Supporting Richard Beale's in Return to Dust were Paula Winslow and Lawrence Dobkin. Sound patterns by Bill James and Tom Hanley. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with Victor Jory in Death Notice. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from CBS, heard on February 1st, 1959. And that wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.